You're listening to Marketplace. I'm Molly Wood, in for Kai Ryssdal. Next month marks a milestone of sorts. You've probably heard us talking on this show about the 20th anniversary of the passage of welfare reform. And one of the most famous political lines in the last two decades, quote, ending welfare as we know it. Well, that's the focus of our brand new podcast, The Uncertain Hour. And we're asking, what does welfare look like now? Marketplace's senior correspondent, Chrissy Clark, looks at one of the roads not taken.
About 10 years ago, Tressie McMillan Cottom was confronted with a small but confounding mystery. She'd just started a new job at a cosmetology school in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was in a strip mall next door to a seafood restaurant,
a gas station, and a convenience store.
That's the campus.
That is the campus. That's right.
Tressie's job was to enroll new students in this school.
In a 9-month cosmetology program to help them with their financial aid paperwork.
This was not your typical college admissions job.
It became pretty apparent to me early on that the types of students that I was working with,
mostly very low-income women of color, often single moms,
needed a whole lot more from me.
More might mean Tressie would end up holding a crying baby during a meeting with a prospective student.
That was more common than having them show up with, say, their parents. I held babies. I held hands. I gave them rides home when their boyfriends took their car and the buses had stopped running.
And then there was this one request prospective students kept coming into Tressie's office with that she really wasn't prepared for. When they would slide this piece of paper onto her desk
and say, yeah, can you confirm that I was here today? Right? Can you certify that I was here?
The paperwork all these women were asking her to sign was a very specific set of paperwork.
Their certification paperwork to remain eligible for their welfare benefits.
What was your reaction at first? Is this like, wait, what is going on here? Why does this keep
Absolutely.
Happening?
Yeah, because there had been no, this was not part of my training for the job at all.
Tressie spent a lot of time wondering why so many students kept sliding welfare paperwork across her desk. At first, she thought maybe it was just happening to her.
I go to some of the senior admissions people in the office and ask them about it the first time it happens. And they go, oh, yeah, we do this all of the time.
Not just filling out welfare paperwork, but dealing with other parts of the welfare bureaucracy.
I fielded phone calls from their caseworkers who needed to confirm that they were indeed enrolled in a what we call short-term workforce credential program.
And that thing that Tressie just said.
Short-term workforce credential program.
She wouldn't realize it until later, but that was the answer to her question. Why are so many students coming to me talking about welfare? Because her beauty school specialized in short-term workforce credential programs. Tressie hasn't worked for the cosmetology school in years. Today, she's a professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University. But she's kept thinking about that experience she had with the beauty school students and all their welfare paperwork.
And that's the question that ends up animating like my research later as a PhD student and now as a sociologist and professor, which was, how did that happen? And this is what I've come to.
What she's come to is that it all comes back to welfare reform. But let me back up a bit. If you've been listening to Marketplace over the last couple months, you might recognize this music. This song was, in its small way, a sort of anthem for the welfare reform movement in the early 1990s.
Join the workforce, don't be afraid, welfare, just to tell.
And the message of this song, to get off welfare and get a job, any job, was at the heart of the battle over welfare reform. There was this sort of fork in the road back then. As welfare roles grew in the 70s through the early 90s, policy wonks and politicians and the heads of county welfare offices were debating how best to get people off welfare. And two main approaches were up for debate. One road, investing more welfare spending in education. Basically, helping welfare recipients who'd often dropped out of school get more skills, a GED, maybe even a college degree. Joe Hutz, a labor economist that specializes in welfare policy, says the idea was that more education
may make welfare recipients less susceptible to the ups and downs of the labor market. Maybe it'll lead to a more long-term position in the labor force. Maybe it'll lead to higher wages, and maybe it'll build self-esteem.
In one way or another, the theory was they'd fare better in the job market and not need welfare anymore. The other road welfare reformers were considering has come to be known as the work-first approach. This approach dismissed all but the most basic education as a waste of time and money. Instead, the best way to help people on welfare, according to the work-firsters?
Get people into a job immediately. We're not going to train you for years. We're not going to send you to school for years. We're going to show you how to find a job.
That's welfare reformer Larry Townsend. He also happens to be the man behind that song.
Join the workforce, don't be afraid.
And in the end, that song and the work-first approach won out in the debates around welfare reform. Which brings us back to Tressie McMillan Cottom. Newly arrived at her job at that cosmetology school in the mid-2000s, a decade after welfare reform had kicked in, when reformers decided to take the work-first approach and leave the education approach behind. That decision brought a lot of new work requirements and time limits to the cash welfare system. Before welfare reform, you got a check based on your economic need. And what you did with your time after that was up to you. Maybe you worked a little or went to school on the side. But since welfare reform, in order to qualify for a welfare check, the average person has to spend at least 30 hours in some sort of, quote, work activity.
Those who are receiving welfare benefits need to either be working or to be doing everything in their power to be working as quickly as possible.
That might mean volunteering at a job or going to a job search club where you're coached on how to find a job. But if you want to pursue any education and still be eligible for welfare at the same time, you only have 12 months where your schooling counts as your full work activity. After 12 months, you can still go to school, but you have to add another work activity on top of school for at least 20 hours, which just makes everything hard to juggle, which is why a
short-term workforce credential program
has become one of the only practical choices for people on welfare who want to pursue an education. These programs are geared specifically towards training you for a particular job, meaning no degrees in English literature, too vague, not even a nursing degree, takes too long. In fact, one of the only simple ways to get an education while still qualifying for welfare since welfare reform is to sign up for something like that 9-month cosmetology program that Tressie used to enroll students in back in North Carolina.
And I went, oh, that was why I had so many women presenting their credentialing paperwork to remain benefits eligible for TANF.
That is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, a.k.a. cash welfare.
Just by the virtue of how the social policy was designed and implemented, there are only so many programs that qualify.
So what do you make of this? was this a good way of helping people become more skilled so that they could lift themselves up?
You know, can you get people into a job? Short-term credentials can absolutely do that.
But Tressie says, when you're talking about a population as vulnerable as the folks cycling through welfare programs, typically single moms with a couple kids living on less than $700 or $800 a month,
who bring with them a host of risk factors for reentering into poverty, right? They're more likely to have not completed high school, for example. They're more likely to have housing instability, all things that make finding and keeping a good job and skilling up very challenging.
She says for people in that situation, already facing so many challenges, sometimes a short-term certificate program just doesn't give them enough time or training to really help them find a job, let alone
good work, sustainable work, long-term work. Short-term certificates and credentials may not be that, especially when they're short-term credentials that are very expensive.
In Tressie's academic research, she's also discovered that while sometimes short-term credential programs are offered at community colleges, in many places around the country, the only school you can find one is a for-profit school, like the cosmetology school where she used to work. Back in the mid-2000s, a 9-month certificate program there cost about $15,000.
That's the kind of price tag that will almost certainly require piling up a lot of student debt, an especially bad thing for someone on welfare, already struggling financially.
If what it was supposed to do was actually change the quality of poor people's lives, short-term credentials, especially when they're high cost, may not be at all the type of social prescription we want.
Tressie says by effectively limiting the education choices of welfare recipients to these short-term credential programs, welfare reform has limited the ability of some poor struggling families to climb up the economic ladder. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
You can hear a very different perspective from a welfare reformer who believed in work first over education. That's on the newest episode that comes out today, and you can download The Uncertain Hour wherever fine podcasts are distributed.